Time to check in on stories beyond the headlines now. We'll join Peter Dykstra of dailyclimate.org and environmental health news as EHN.org. Hi there, Peter. Kind of steamy down there in Conyers, Georgia, huh?
Well, it's 90 degrees or more for the umpteenth consecutive day here. We'll talk a little bit later about the heat, but you know, there have been a lot of intensive efforts to hamstring the U.S. EPA from doing its job, enforcing pollution laws and protecting the environment. But here's one from Congress. It's just a tiny bit over the top.
Peter, you're saying Congress going over the top? That's impossible.
There's an amendment on the bill that funds EPA, the Interior Department, the Forest Service, and other agencies. And Congressman Richard Hudson of North Carolina has attached the following, and I quote, "None of the funds made available by this act may be used to pay the costs of any officer or employee of the Environmental Protection Agency for official travel by airplane."
Wait, let's see if I get this right. Republican Representative Hudson wants to put the entire EPA on its own no-fly list?
That's right. And in fairness to Congressman Hudson, nothing in the amendment would prohibit EPA employees for paying for government travel out of their own pockets. Nor is there a ban on traveling by Greyhound, covered wagon, stagecoach, or camel to monitor and inspect EPA's over 1,300 Superfund sites, tens of thousands of permitted air and water discharges, mine reclamation sites, pesticide application sites, hazardous materials production and storage sites, and more.
Hey, don't forget Amtrak, as long as Congress doesn't cut its budget any further. Peter, are you getting the impression that maybe the congressman just doesn't want EPA to be able to do its job?
Well, it's a little bit different than that, Steve. Congressman Hudson has previously introduced measures to prevent EPA from regulating backyard barbecues and also from regulating NASCAR emissions. And those are things that apparently EPA had no intention of doing anyway.
More fodder for a most interesting political year. Hey, what else did you bring us today?
Well, there's a little bit more of the same terrible news we've already heard enough of. Another environmental activist in Honduras was abducted and beaten to death last week. Lesbia Yaneth Urquilla was a vocal opponent of hydro dam construction and mining on indigenous lands in the nation that had already been deemed the deadliest place on earth for environmentalists.
We reported on the murder of Berta Cáceres, the Honduran environmental leader and Goldman Prize winner, just a few months ago. And then just a few weeks after that, another Honduran activist, Nelson Garcia, was shot dead by Honduran security forces.
And the watchdog group Global Witness says there have been over 100 murders of activists in Honduras since the year 2010.
Well, Peter, give us something, and please, preferably not bad news, from the Environmental History Files for this week.
Well, we said we're going to talk about the heat, and this month marks two anniversaries in the history of our trying to cool off. On July 14th, 1847, a physician named John Gorey was looking for a way to help his patients in Apalachicola, Florida, to stay cool while dealing with yellow fever, malaria, and other tropical diseases. He designed a machine that cycles highly compressed air to produce ice. This is in Florida in 1847.
So every time we cool down with a summer beverage, we can thank Dr. John Gorey?
Well, yes and no. Gorey obtained a patent for his ice machine in 1851, but then his financial backer died, and then Gorey died a few years later. He endured a lot of criticism from afar. Some of the big northern newspapers scoffed at the idea that a crackpot claimed to have made ice in steamy Florida. Other inventors came along using ammonia instead of compressed air, and ice making came of age in the last half of the 19th century. It revolutionized the food industry, it accelerated the race to conquer the western U.S. for cattle grazing and more, and eventually enabled large-scale fisheries, it filled billions of fast food drink cups, and last month, of course, it allowed the National Hockey League to place a new team in Las Vegas. Yes, that's right, folks, hockey in Vegas.
Okay, hey, what's your other cool invention?
On July 17, 1902, Willis Carrier of Pittsburgh laid out plans for what would become known as the world's first air conditioning system. Today, we would probably consider it to be more like the world's first dehumidifier. He dried out the thick summer air, and later on, Carrier and others combined his design with refrigeration machines to actually cool the air down.
And today, folks consider air conditioning more of a necessity than a luxury, but, you know, it can come with a huge carbon footprint unless it's powered by renewables.
That's right. In 1973, 52% of U.S. homes had AC. Now it's over 90%. I tried to look up the percentage of homes in Anchorage, Alaska that have AC, and I couldn't find a hard number, but I found 24 Anchorage businesses listed as offering air conditioning repair. And if you want to take a little snapshot of the rest of the world, AC sales have doubled in China in the last 5 years, and one estimate says the city of Mumbai, India, devotes 40% of its electric output just to power air conditioners.
And if they're burning coal, they're heating up the world to try to stay cold. Chilling statistic, Peter. Peter Dykstra is with Environmental Health News as EHN.org and DailyClimate.org. Talk to you again soon, Peter.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve. Talk to you soon.
And there's more on these stories at our website, LOE.org.